The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There is a ancient teaching or discourse involving a conversation the Buddha had with a pair of acrobats. It seems that these were kind of like street acrobats who performed acrobatic tricks on the street for people by climbing up on each other's shoulders. So one day they were going to perform, and it was the master acrobat with his apprentice. And the master acrobat said to the apprentice, "You go up on my shoulders and you watch over me, and I'll watch over you, and this way we'll protect each other." And the acrobat apprentice said, "No, you watch over yourself, and I'll watch over myself, and that way we'll protect each other, we'll be safe." So they had a different opinion. And so they went to the Buddha and asked him. And it seems that maybe in one edition of the story, the Buddha kind of approved of the apprentice acrobat, that really you should take care of yourself, and then that will be taking care of yourself, of others. But then there's a verse teaching that follows what the Buddha said, and has a little different message. And this is what the verse is saying. "Protecting oneself, one protects others. Protecting others, one protects oneself. And how does one, in protecting oneself, protect others? By the repeated and frequent practice of mindfulness. And how does one, in protecting others, protect oneself? By patience and forbearance, by nonviolence, and by a nonviolent and harmless life, by loving kindness and compassion." So in these verses, the Buddha presents both ideas, that in protecting oneself, one protects others, and in protecting others, one can protect oneself. And perhaps the two go together. Sometimes we do one, sometimes the other, and there's a mutuality, a mutual care. And so knowing which of these sides to take care of at any given time is part of the art of living. And so then the Buddha asked a question, "How does one, in protecting oneself, protect others?" He answers his question, "By the repeated and frequent practice of mindfulness." That we protect others by being mindful of ourselves. And is cultivating repeatedly and frequently mindfulness, we get to know each other, ourselves, well. We get to know how we are. We get to know what motivates us, what we're about to do before we do it, what we're about to say before we say it. We know what our biases are and prejudices, and we know what our desires and aversions are. We know what our feelings are, emotions, and all that goes on. And if we could track ourselves carefully and really understand what we're doing, then naturally we will want to not harm ourselves. We'll not want to do the things that cause suffering to ourselves. It turns out that when we harm others, we're also harming ourselves. When we protect ourselves from self-harm, with it that way, we're also protecting others. So this idea of mindfulness as as a way of protecting others, is because we really know ourselves. In addition to the self-understanding that mindfulness brings, it's also the mindfulness meditation can bring a very deep subtleness, a very deep state of unification, of wholeness, of really feeling connected and settled in oneself in a deep way. Generally, when people cause harm to others, either carelessly or intentionally, people are usually not very grounded or settled on themselves. They're usually quite unsettled, and often causing harm is a symptom of feeling a lot of suffering or distress or unease or tension in oneself. As the meditation settles all the tension away, then there's much less impetus to act unkindly, to be mean, to take advantage of people, to lie, to steal, and all kinds of things. And so this mindfulness practice transforms us into an ethical person. There's something very ethical about practicing mindfulness deeply and well. We become ethical because we see the impact in a very deep way. We're not ethical because we're following a bunch of rules, not to dismiss the value of ethical rules. But there's an ethical sensitivity that comes along with mindfulness, that we become more and more sensitive to ourselves, to others, to what's going on. And in this way, we then protect others from ourselves. And then the Buddha goes on to say that, and how does one, in protecting others, protect oneself? So to actively protect others, we can practice patience, forbearance, nonviolence, and a harmless life through loving kindness and compassion. It seems like partly what the Buddha is talking about here is not, we can't protect others from all the dangers of the world. We can help, we can try to, maybe somewhat. But the primary, seems in this teaching, the primary person that we're protecting others from is from ourselves. And so we protect others when we actively are angry, when we're actively impatient, by being patient, by holding our anger in check. We protect others from our tendency to cause harm by being nonviolent. And living a harmless life. This idea of a harmless life, a nonviolent, non-harming life, is really at the heart and key of the Buddhist ethical teachings. In fact, it's not just ethical, it's at the very heart of what it means to become free and liberated in Buddhism. That to really awake up, to become enlightened, is the synonymous becoming someone who has become harmless to others, doesn't want to harm others, is living a nonviolent life dedicated to not causing harm. If you want to know who's awakened, see how they behave and see how they act towards others and see if they're doing things that are harmful to others. If they are, they're probably not awake in the way the Buddha talks about. And by loving kindness and compassion, we protect others with our friendliness, our love, our kindness, our compassion. We just want the best for them. So if we take care of them that way, are kind to them, compassionate with people, nonviolent, non-harming to them, we don't give in to our anger. We might be angry, but we don't give in to it and let it spill over onto others, especially in hostile ways. We protect others from us, but we also protect ourselves, because we protect ourselves from what they might do in retribution, what they might do in return to us. If you're angry to others, chances are they'll be angry back. Harm others, chances are they'll harm you back. So, in this way, take care of yourself, and you doing that, you'll take care of others. Take care of others, and you'll take care of yourself. This mutuality of the two going back and forth. And the reason I wanted to give this teaching or talk about this is that some people feel that spending a lot of time meditating or involved in their own inner practice in life, when the world is burning and world is suffering and lots of challenges we have around us, is maybe selfish or self-centered or that it's somehow inappropriate to do that. And that's certainly a valid concern. Finding the right balance between self-care and caring for others is part of the art of life. But I want to emphasize that we can take better care of the world around us when we've first taken care of ourselves. And that to take time to meditate is as important as brushing your teeth or cleaning, keeping yourself clean or having a good meal or exercising, whatever you need to do to stay in balance. The deeper you can go in meditation, the deeper you can awaken your care. The deeper the mindfulness goes, even though it's a kind of inward-directed practice, it's an inward-directed practice that turns around, turns us inside out. It can't be selfish, it can't be self-preoccupied, because the very movements and activity of being self-centered or arrogant or conceited in our practice is a kind of limitation, is a kind of suffering, is a kind of tension that we'll feel as we keep going deeper and deeper. It'll dissolve, pass away. The strong ideas we have about me, myself, and mine, the strong sense of self and self-ideations that we might live by, cannot persist when the mindfulness really goes in deep and we begin settling and quieting the mind of all its fixed ideas and opinions that we have. And what meditators begin to experience is that the sharp and hard barriers between self and other begin to dissolve. The idea that that we're holding ourselves tight and protected and have armor on, conceptual armor, begins to dissolve in favor of being able to have a sensitivity, an empathy, a care for others. The very movement inward is an antidote to selfishness. Go in far enough and we get turned inside out, and our care that's on the inside first is something that we kind of wear on our sleeves or on our chest, and we kind of feel and care for the world as if the right hand is caring for the left hand. Maybe what the right hand, left hand is washing the left, the left hand is washing the right hand. This mutuality that's almost unself-conscious. It's more like the natural order of things, the natural expression. What wells up is, of course, we care for someone when we feel that they're our kin. We feel like that we're intimately connected to them, where we are friends, we are family, we are somehow know each other, know something, feel connected in a very deep way. Can we then have too much compassion? Can we then overgive ourselves and do too much for others? It's certainly possible to be driven by the need and the desire to care and help and do things that's overdone, where we lose ourselves. Some people can harm themselves by exhausting themselves and straining themselves and sacrificing, giving up too much of themselves in the service of taking care of others. But if we keep coming back and practicing mindfulness, we'll feel the imbalance of that. The self-care of taking care of oneself, knowing the impact things have, knowing how to hold our ground, knowing when we need to take care of ourselves, learning how to come back and to breathe easily and find our relaxed breath again, and to come into the world, living the world with our relaxed breath, to have a breath that's at ease. A soft breath, an easeful breath, is one of the great teachers, one of the great tools, one of the great supports for us in our life. To sacrifice your breathing tight and constricted and kind of almost out of breath by doing too much, is a kind of harm to ourselves. And if we're harming ourselves, there's a very good chance we're not really offering good care to others. So there's a balancing act going on where we're finding our way back and forth between when do I care for others more than myself? When do I care for myself more than others? When do I care for both equally? Different circumstances, different situation we find ourselves in, that balance and that equation of figuring out which is which changes depending on what the need is. When I had very small children at home, babies, it was clear that taking care of them at the expense of my own welfare even, at times was necessary and the appropriate thing to do. As they became older and older, it became appropriate not to do that anymore. It was appropriate not to lose so much sleep. It was appropriate to get more sleep. And so the balance shifted in another direction. When a neighbor is in distress in the middle of the night, that's maybe when we give up our sleep, so we take them to the hospital. and those situations, clear, we want to support others and not be so concerned with ourselves. But at other times, if we're feeling distressed, if we're feeling afraid, or we're feeling a lot of tension and stress in our lives, a lot of preoccupation and kind of losing touch with ourselves by the spinning mind, maybe that's a time where self-care is more important than other care. Maybe that's a time to settle back and refresh and get grounded again in ourselves. And then, once that has happened, then we come back into the world in a very different way, able to help more and support more. And so the balance goes back and forth, and the perfect balance is quite exquisite sometimes, where caring for self and caring for others is indistinguishable. It's no difference. Like somehow the mindfulness is strong enough and broad enough, 360 degree enough, that we're tracking what's going on for us, the impact things have on us, what our needs are, what's happening here, the stresses and joys and motivations here, and we're tracking the other person and present for that person, understand what's going on for the person, and listening and maybe caring in some active way. And it's the two are together as if it's almost, I wouldn't say we merge. That's a little dangerous when we merge, but there's no barrier. Well, 50% of the attention is centered on me, and 50% is centered on the other person. It's an exquisite thing. In that 50-50, there's a kind of beautiful dissolving of the self barrier, dissolving of the kind of self concepts that we often get stuck in. But it's safe to dissolve those self concepts because we're so in touch with ourselves. We're really tracking what's going on, so we can take care of what's happening in a good way. So to me, it was quite a surprise after a few years of meditation to notice that more and more that it didn't make so much sense to me to only be concerned about my own welfare. That as I became more settled, this feeling of being turned inside out and feeling that the outside world was just as much part of me as the inside world, that the barrier between self and the world was no longer so solid. And it felt like completely a surprise to me that there's natural feeling that the welfare of the world was just as important as my own welfare. The suffering of others was something that I could care for just as much as for myself. But not so much because I, was thinking about it, planning it, analyzing the situation, being very rational about it. It was because somehow I became less and less self-preoccupied, less and less caught up in myself and my fears and worries and griefs and lonelinesses and all the kind of things I had when I was young. And those started to dissolve and settle away. In the dissolving of them opened up this whole other world, a Dharma world of care, Dharma world of compassion, a Dharma world where at the center of it was the central motivation for life is compassion and care. That's what motivates. That's what gives life meaning. That's what gives it really a sense of purpose, really. Not because you're supposed to do that, but the surprise for me, it just was what welled up. It welled up because I did this deep practice. I went to a monastery. I went on long retreats. I really practiced a lot of meditation, what would seem like a self-involved practice. But I'm so glad I did it because it turned me inside out and really became the purpose, the reason why I've dedicated my adult life to try to be a teacher, try to be support people, try to help people with this Dharma and practice and mindfulness and meditation. to help people live better lives and have less suffering in the world, and try to improve this world for all of us. And this is the means by which I've been trying to do it. And I very much appreciate that you're here and listening, and I guess you're giving me a chance to try to be supportive and helpful, and certainly my love to do that. And while I do it, this kind of mutual care, this reciprocity, this ways in which I'm caring for myself at the same time as caring for others, is definitely a principle of what goes on here. And I feel very fortunate, and I feel nourished by this. So that's about all I have to say. I don't know if some of you, it's a little bit early to stop. We can have a few more minutes. We could try and see if any of you have any questions you would like to ask. I'm very happy to try to answer. And see if we can have a little exchange back and forth through the chat box here, if you'd like. Try the experiment. There's a delay between the time I speak here and the time it appears up for you all. So we'll see. Then we have to wait a little bit to see if there's some questions. And here we go. Is there a specific type of meditation or prayer to help with this? Yeah, very nice question. Well, I certainly put a tremendous value on the practice of mindfulness meditation. That mindfulness has so many different benefits that it's kind of like the benefits are so broad in all kinds of directions that you almost can't go wrong with doing mindfulness. That this is the mindfulness that's done the most for me to awaken my care and my care for self and care for others. There are specific practices on compassion and practices of loving kindness that some people find very, very beneficial. I've had a great time practicing them. But so I think sometimes it's good to practice mindfulness first. It creates mindfulness to really kind of get the teachings, the practice of mindfulness under your belt, to really understand the foundation of it, or how it works and what it is, and become skilled at it, is a fantastic foundation for all other kinds of meditation and prayer. Do you have other examples of ways this deep care and compassion is expressed in the world beyond teaching Dharma? Infinite number of ways. It really has to be something that makes your heart sing, I think. I don't think that this caring for the world out of the depth of our being works very well if it's a sense of obligation and duty. But it's really what makes us sing. And someone, for example, who's a musician, for example, or an artist, who that's what they love to do, and their joy, their peace, their delight, and their sense of creativity, and kind of their is in their music or in their art, they could bring a lot of joy and delight to other people. They're not helping directly someone who's sick and not a doctor for them, but without music and without art, the life we live would be a lot poorer. So the expression of compassion for some people is to make their music and the art available to the world. That would be their way. So I don't want to, assume there's any one way, the classic ways, you should go and, you could go to a hospital and be a doctor, a nurse, or a chaplain, I think it has to be a match for what makes your heart sing. And when you know what makes your heart sing, it really feels like this is how you want to express your life in some deep way, then you can ask your question, how can I do this in a way that's beneficial for the world? How can I do this so it's caring for the suffering world? And for some people, it's much more direct that they want to, do actually be right in the middle of the fire of the world and suffering. Some people go to the refugee camps around the world and do work there. And there's so many different ways. So I like the question because of the opportunity to say that, you know, it doesn't have to look like a classic profession of care. And not everyone is going to, teaching the Dharma is not everyone's idea of a good time or what's going to make their heart sing. I have a lot of respect for our differences and what really makes us come alive and what seems right to us. And I hope that, you know, the mindfulness practice can help us find that. Someone said cooking. Yes, absolutely, cooking is a wonderful way to love and care for the world. In these times with social distancing, what ways can we express our compassion and care for a friend who is dying? Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't had to address this issue directly, but if the friend can receive a letter or an email or someone can read it to them, you do some art that you want to send to your friend, a photograph, some kind words. Maybe it's you can send something else that would be meaningful for them to see or hear. And there's all these ways of sending video now, and someone can play a little video of you saying some words or offering some kindness. It's a very difficult question to ask in the beautiful way you state it, because how people die is so varied, and what people need as they're dying is so varied. So the first task would be, to the best of your ability, to kind of figure out what does this person need, and if you can't find and talk to the person directly, to asking them, what do you need? What would you like? What can I do for you? Sometimes maybe ask relatives or other friends who are in touch, caregivers of them. It's very sad these days when people are dying in the hospital or nursing homes and no one's allowed to visit them. And I've had people tell me that their parents were going to die in a nursing home from COVID-19 and they weren't allowed to come to visit. So what can you do? If you can't get through at all, then I think can't really have contact with them, can't really get a message or can't do anything for them directly, then maybe help those who are caring for them. Help the caregivers. Or if you can't help the caregivers, maybe sit and practice, sit in meditation, and touch into some of the deepest places of peace and well-being and compassion that you have access to. Sometimes when I experience the suffering of the world, the suffering, I allow myself to feel it, it inspires me, it encourages me, it awakens me a strong drive to practice better. I feel like because I see the transformation this Dharma practice can do, it's such a good medicine for the world. It's such an important thing that people really touch into the depths of peace, depths of freedom from suffering that's possible. So if I can't really help someone else, then at least I can do is to practice better and really make myself a better vehicle for the work in the future. So maybe the last one. I sometimes find it difficult to give myself the same patience and compassion that I try to give to others. How can I remember to be gentle to myself? Well, if the opposite of being gentle is being harsh or demanding, one of the ways to look into this is actually to feel intimately, this is the value of mindfulness practice, really feel the harshness or feel the judgmentalism or feel the commando who's requiring you to do something. Feel the distress, feel the fear, feel the impatience that we have. Feel the lack of compassion that's there. In other words, one of the principles of mindfulness is when you can't live up to an ideal that you have, then rather than keep trying to do it, really take an honest look at what keeps you from the ideal. What's actually going on? And try to do that with as much compassion, as much generosity as you can to yourself, so you don't, you know, you're not criticizing yourself for what's going on. But you enter into that world of what's getting in the way of the ideal with care, with attention, as if it's, if you can approach it kindly, it's a door to deeper and deeper self-understanding. It's a door into some kind of resolving and dissolving and healing of the very underlying tendencies that make you impatient and keep compassion at bay. So in other words, turn towards the difficulty and go through it to the other side. That's a classic approach in Buddhism. So I hope these make sense, and I certainly appreciated that you asked these questions, and I very much appreciated this back and forth and exchange. And so it's, you know, we're connected this way as well. And so I hope that you take good care of yourself, and certainly I hope that if you take care of yourself, you will also take care of others. May we all of us care for each other. Thank you.